You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf on a Monday morning. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Great weekend of sports to talk about. Great start for Kirk Cousins with the Vikings. Sam Darnold looking good in his NFL debut with the Jets. It's been a long time since we said something great is going on with the Jets. But we are going to start with the thing that had the three of us, and I'm sure most of you, captivated all weekend long, and that was Tiger Woods. A year ago, Tiger was all but done. Scandal and surgeries had done him in. Little did we know, Tiger was preparing for one of the greatest comeback stories in all of sports. Yesterday at the PGA Championship, he was incredible, shooting a 64, finishing 14 under for the tournament, shot his lowest score ever in the final round of a major, lowest ever final round of a major, finishing second behind Brooks Koepka. Here's Tiger Woods after the round on Sunday.
I didn't know how many tournaments I'd play this year or if I'd even play. And so each tournament brought about its own challenges. And I didn't know what the number was going to be this year. I didn't know how I was going to play. And so at the beginning of the year, if you said, yeah, I would have a chance, legit chance to win the last two major championships, with what swing? I didn't have a swing at the time. You know, I had no speed. I didn't have a golf swing. I didn't have, my short game wasn't quite there yet. You know, my putting was okay, but, you know, I hadn't played in 2 years. And so it's been a hell of a process this year. But I'm in uncharted territory because no one's ever had a fused spine hitting it like I'm hitting it. So I've had to try and figure this out on my own. And it's been really, really hard. It's a lot harder than people think. And I'm just very pleased at what I've done so far. And now, I mean, to be part of the Ryder Cup conversation, going from where I've come from to now in the last year, it's been pretty cool.
I mean, how refreshing for Tiger to be able to finish in second place and yet still glean so much from his performance and so much perspective from where he came from. CeCe, how close was Tiger Woods to winning his 15th major?
Well, he was a lot closer than we would have ever suspected him to be at this point. Tiger, on reflecting on it, starting the season almost 700th ranking in the world, and now in the last two majors on Sunday to be a shot or two out of the lead in the British Open, in the Open Championship, having the lead there. Yeah, he didn't expect that. But you have to go back to where he started from. Tiger and the people around him, and talking to Tiger's agent, they really didn't know. They didn't know if Tiger Woods was going to play golf ever again. He had a surgery that no golfer has ever played on the tour with, a fused back. So now we've been able to see him about three quarters of the way through a season. As he said, he doesn't have a swing coach now. Tiger Woods is trying to figure this out on his own. He's reinvented his swing three or four times, and now he's trying to reinvent his body. But his brain is the only thing that he does on the level that won him 14 majors. And that's what kept him in this tournament, and that's what we will allow him to win another golf tournament and another major. It was exciting to see. Tiger Woods didn't lose this golf tournament.
No.
That's why he was so happy, all right? Brooks Koepka won it with his outstanding play. Tiger has never played this well in a major and did not win. But it speaks to where we are as far as the PGA Tour right now, the overall quality of players and the depth of players that you have to be able to get through to be able to win a major, Nick.
See, what you just said there, you said to me last night on the phone, you said Tiger's never played this well in a major and not won. So I looked into the numbers on that a little bit. No one has ever shot this low of a score without winning a major. No one has ever had a better second place score as far as 266. Now, part of that's it's a par 70, not a par 72. Right. Mm-hmm. But no one has ever had fewer shots in a four-round major championship without hoisting the trophy. I said Sunday morning on Twitter, I thought Tiger had to go out and shoot a 64. I thought a 64 is what he would need to end up forcing a playoff. It seemed like Tiger thought he needed a round of 64 with the way he was attempting to attack the course. He went out and shot a 64, and Brooks Koepka, who's just been extraordinary the last 2 years, he's now won 3 of 7 majors, 3 of 6. He didn't play in one of those.
He didn't play in Augusta.
The Masters, right. So he's won 3 of the last 6 majors he's played in. Koepka went out, and while other guys were fading and Tiger was surging, he stayed steady. But the way he did it is what makes it, to me, all the more remarkable. I've never seen a front nine like we saw Sunday. I've never seen a player go an opening 9 holes, not hit a single fairway, and be 3 under for that stretch of golf.
Also, being in a major, when you miss the fairways, it's more penal. So yes. What he did was remarkable.
I go ahead, Jenna.
No, I was going to ask for, I mean, I was watching and following both of you guys tweet about it, and it seemed like whatever he was doing seemed to stand out. Mike, I was curious what stood out to you the most, but I assume for you is the fact that he wasn't hitting the fairways, still managed to keep his wits about him and play the game that he wants.
And I'll take only minor issue with one thing Chris said as far as, it seems to me, his iron play, it might not be what it was when he had the Tiger Slam, but he's still the best iron player in the world, I believe. I think his iron play and his creativity.
Yeah, Tiger Woods and traveling around the country, watching Tiger play. I've probably been to 15 to 20 majors. I'm talking about watching how he hits the ball. He does nothing better than he did before.
Sure.
His iron play. It was ridiculous. That's how you win 14 majors, though. Like, now we're right in the moment, so people think, wow, his iron play. No, his iron play was better. He drove the ball better. He putted the ball better. His short game was better. That's the Tiger Woods that had golf captivated. Now, his iron play is getting close to what it was. His putter sometimes shows you glimpses, yes, but ultimately, none of those things are up to where he was. He put things together yesterday, but it will all go back to 2 simple holes. Hole number 1 and hole number 2 of this championship, where he started bogey, double bogey. And those 3 shots right there end up costing him a chance to win major number 15.
When we look at this from 30,000 feet, what we also see, though, is the last 2 majors combined of all the players who played in both of them, who has the lowest score in relation to par? It's Tiger Woods. Now, he didn't win either one of them. Like, he tied for 6th in the British, and he ended up solo 2nd in this one. But he is playing. There have been times in the attempted comebacks, the stops and starts, even earlier this year, where we were kind of grading Tiger on a curve, and a justifiable curve, because as CeCe talks about all the time, first golfer to ever compete at a high level on tour that fused back. It's not grading him on a curve to say he played well enough to win this tournament. Like,
yes.
he absolutely, and in most cases, if Koepka wasn't something of a cyborg yesterday, I mean, seemed like every drive was piped down the middle 330 yards.
Right.
We saw Justin Thomas have the Tiger effect and fade. We saw Gary Woodland was playing next to Tiger Woods. They didn't show him on TV except for his opening shot.
I was just going to say, and you never saw him again.
His final shot. Like, Woodland was a non-factor. But Koepka was spectacular, and he's now got 3 majors, which, by the way, as you pointed out, C, that's the same amount as Jordan Spieth.
Yes.
It's only 1 shy of Rory. Like,
yes.
Koepka all of a sudden has passed the Dustin Johnson, mm-hmm. Justin Thomas, those young guns, as arguably the best young player on tour.
Does it feel like Tiger Woods is maybe one player faltering down the back 9 or whatever, or Tiger Woods is maybe a stroke or 2 away from finally putting this all together?
I mean, he's very, very close. The thing that Tiger has to do is go back to what he did before, and that's how can he get off to a lead. If Tiger Woods was in the lead and he had shot 64, all of them would have folded. So, and when you're from the lead, like, it's suffocating. I mean, just imagine if it was the roles reversed. Imagine if Koepka was playing 2 groups ahead of Tiger. And because Koepka was the only one who wasn't affected by the noise, the movement, even the reporters. All the reporters were following Tiger. They had to go backwards to be able to follow the winner for the last couple holes. So Tiger is very, very close, I think, in his mind. And that's the part that he's very, very proud of today, because Tiger Woods did not have his best golf game. And people used to get upset before when Tiger used to win. And they asked him, Tiger, what kind of game did you have? And once Tiger said, I had my C game. All right, Tiger's going to find his A game again, and he's definitely going to be in the winner's circle. And it's a breath of fresh air to the tour. Justin Thomas, he spoke about it afterwards and saying this was the first time the Tiger effect, he could feel it on the golf course when he was there. And that was a tremendous compliment to the atmosphere there in St. Louis this weekend.
When you say get his A game, in your eyes, I'd imagine, I'm curious, though, the part of his game that if he's going to win a major, he would need to clean up the most is off the tee. Is the driving accuracy, and yesterday it wasn't even just with the driver or the three wood, sometimes it was spraying irons. Like, that's the one part of his game that I know he was always somewhat erratic off the tee, but he could bomb.
But he was a lot better than he was now, and he was the longest player on tour. He's not that, so he doesn't have the distance advantage. And the way the golf courses are set up, it's hard to score when you don't hit the fairway. And so it's not only his driver, it's also his three wood, because now if he can hit one of those two clubs, even his three wood, he can carry that 275, 280. He can play. He couldn't even hit that yesterday because he couldn't trust it. And it's not that he doesn't know where it's going to go. It's sometimes he's missing left and sometimes he's missing right. And he's not used to that. He only likes to be able to miss one way. And once he figures that out, then we'll see him win.
Tiger Woods, probably the happiest he's ever been, coming in second place. Coming up on the other side, does Kirk Cousins make the Vikings Super Bowl contenders? That is next. This is First Things First. All right, new topic now, NFL quarterbacking debuts. The Vikings rolled out their new man at the helm of the huddle. His name is Kirk Cousins, facing the Broncos, and Cousins needed just one drive to make his mark, completing all four of his pass attempts for 42 yards and a touchdown. Looked good, felt good, wasn't in there for long, but it was enough. See, how much better does Kirk Cousins make the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, Kirk's a quality quarterback. You know he's more than a competent starter. He's been very, very healthy. This is the best personnel overall that he's played with throughout his career. So I think he's going to be very good. But let's not get the Vikings. We kind of, because of Kurt's money and all of it being guaranteed, we kind of forget what's the mantra of this team going to be. And it's their defense. I mean, their defense is stacked. They're not going to give up a whole bunch of points. They play in a beautiful stadium indoors. That's going to be able to help them, because Kurt doesn't have one of the biggest arms. He has more than strong enough arm as an NFL quarterback. But his overall accuracy and his ability for the coordinator to feel comfortable with him to call any pass play. All right. Last year, I know people fell in love with the quarterback and everything, and it was like, oh, he's the MVP and everything, but they were limited. All right. He's height challenged, and he throws the ball into coverage. That's Case Keenum. That's what he's done. He's never done it in the NFL for a long period of time. Kurt has been consistent. If he plays the same way that he did in Washington, the Vikings, yes, they have upgraded at quarterback, and they only need to get a little bit better. They were in the NFC Championship last year, so does it make them that much better? The Vikings think so.
The questions for the Vikings in the passing game are going to be offensive line related, and we can talk more about that in a moment. But there's one play in particular that I saw from Kirk that is simply a pass Case Keenum couldn't make. And it wasn't the touchdown. It was the pass to Stephon Diggs that led to the touchdown up the far right side of the field where, I mean, it was perfect ball placement. It was, I mean, what I'm seeing here is he sees the rush coming. He sees that the guy doesn't even have a full step on the corner, and he puts it right there. See, what do you see?
Yeah, but
there?
He gets off number one. Thielen's the number one receiver coming on the cross. You have a combination. You have a crossing route, and then Diggs is going to make a stutter go move up the sideline. He knows the crosser's taken away. He puts the ball only where Stephon Diggs. So the flight of the football, the quick read, and that's going to become important this year with that offensive line, the question marks around that offensive line.
I just want to stay on this play for a moment, because if he waits just another beat to where the receiver be in the end zone, then the safety's there. Like, that's the only he threw it the first moment that the receiver had the corner beat and the last moment to where the safety's not even going to be in the frame when he gets to the ball. That is a perfect throw. That isn't a guy, I'm sure it was a great route, see, but that is a perfect throw right there. That's what they paid him the money for.
We talk about the quarterback, but how much better did the team get overall? And if it was there room to really get that much better from last year? Obviously, they have Delvin Cook back. But with Kirk Cousins there, tell me how much better overall the team got.
Well, they got to get better than last year offensively, because if they can support their defense, it only makes the team better. If you look at the teams that we see in the NFC that we think are going to be at the top, that being the Rams, that being the Saints, that being Philadelphia, Dallas, Atlanta, Carolina, all these teams have a good defensive front. And that's the biggest problem for the Vikings. Their weakest unit happens to be their offensive line. So, yes, they have improved at quarterback, but they have not gotten better at offensive line because they've already lost a starter and one of their best offensive linemen, the center, Pat Ephron. He is not even practicing yet. He's on PUP. He's going to come. He's had two offseason surgeries, so he should be healthy in a couple weeks, but he hasn't even started practicing yet.
When Chris Canty's out here talking about the Colts last week, and he said, you know, one of the reasons he liked them drafting Quentin Nelson is that guard, center, guard up the middle combo. So the Vikings right guard, Mike Remmers, he's not practicing. Pat Eflin, he's not practicing. And Nick Easton, who arguably was their best offensive lineman heading into the year, he's done for the season. You add to that the tragic death, untimely death of their offensive line coach, Tony Sperano. Mm-hmm. And now this is a team that only going into camp, people that watch the show, if you're not in Minnesota, don't know this. Every Friday, C does a hit with a local Minnesota television station, the Fox station in Minnesota. And all summer when they were asking about the Vikings, it was they'd talk about Case Keenum. C would mention the offensive line. They'd talk about Stephon Diggs. C would mention the offensive line. That was before Sperano's tragic death and the loss of Nick Easton. This was their biggest issue if everyone was healthy. That is the only reason to me the Vikings wouldn't duplicate what they did last year.
Right, and people won't know Nick Easton, his name, but he is the best lineman that they had. Last year, Pro Football's Focus, there's five guards or centers that played over 400 snaps. Nick was one of those. He didn't give up a sack last season in 400 snaps and only gave up three hurries. So when you lose that quality of center early, it will be part of the storyline in me talking about the Vikings and how they're able to move forward.
But is Kirk Cousins a big enough upgrade to sort of work around that until they can shore up that line?
Well, listen, I don't know that they're going to be able to shore up the line. Like, there's always a team or two that has a guy that was undrafted or a seventh-round pick that from a couple years ago that comes in and he's excellent. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they're going to have to work with what they have. But this is why you pay that type of money for quarterbacks. Case Keenum, as good as his story was, and we saw him making plays running around, he needs things to be going a certain way. Kirk Cousins, you expect that he can deal with. He's got excellent wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I think Dalvin Cook's a very good player. You're not going to have the perfect team, right? We talk about this with Dallas. He's got the offensive line, the running back, doesn't have the wide receivers. You pay Kirk to be able to make do with it. What I'm curious about is if Philly's right here, if Philly is the team everyone's chasing in the NFC, like, who got better this offseason? The Rams, who added seemingly everything except the quarterback, right? They were stuck with their quarterback. Or the Vikings, who they get Dalvin Cook back, but didn't really add much aside from the quarterback. Right? Like, does Kirk Cousins, is that one position enough of an upgrade to make them the clear-cut second favorite in the NFC, which is clearly the toughest conference?
All right, we got to take another break. Coming up, will we see Sam Darnold under center for the Jets in week one? That's next. This is First Things First. All right, we're moving on so quickly now. Time for stories to start your morning. Despite being connected to the Chinese Basketball League, Dwayne Wade reaffirmed his commitment to the Miami Heat next season. Wade said, quote, "If I play basketball this year, it'll be in a Heat uniform." Nick Wright, how much do you think Dwayne Wade has left in the tank?
Not much, but whenever he runs out of gas, it should be wearing a Heat uniform. He got something left in the tank. Now he's kind of like me, known to be like, I can probably make it. And sometimes you end up on the side of the road out of gas, but at least he's going to do it in the friendly confines of Wade County.
Miami.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad he's not going to China for $25 million for a three-year deal. That's what was reportedly offered. Stay in Miami, probably get a job in the organization after. Greatest player long-term in the history of their franchise.
Yeah, I'd like to see him finish there. There's no way he's going to be playing basketball in 3 years. So,
right.
You know, I don't know what they thought they were going to be getting there, but they were going to get ripped off. So go back to the Heat, D-Wade. One more year.
Absolutely. And he had some nice playoff moments this year for them.
All right, to the NFL now. The Browns continue to court Dez Bryant. Tyrod Taylor said, quote, "That would be awesome," when asked about the Browns, adding Dez. CC, would Dez be an awesome fit in Cleveland?
I'm about as much talent on the roster as possible. If you look at the Josh Gordon not knowing if he's going to come back, Antonio Callaway being a young receiver who has had a lot of problems in the past, I would go with Dez. I believe that him and Landry can get it done. And if your quarterback wants a guy, hey, there's a good chance that working out, that relationship, that chemistry, it's easier to do when the quarterback puts in the request.
If Tyrod was the only quarterback on the roster that mattered, I would say yes. But I've seen the story of Dez with a young quarterback that's working through some things. And I'm typically talent trumps all. With everything I read from Dez on Twitter this past week, with the fact that the GM couldn't get a hold of him, and from what seems like a little bit potentially combustible wide receiver room, for all those reasons, the Browns, to me, are not the right fit for Dez Bryant. They might be the only team offering him a job, though, so I don't know that he can work.
Yeah, I don't think the wide receiver room is combustible. Josh Gordon's not there. Callaway is a rookie. He don't have no speaking part. Landry has taken over that. He is the dude.
Speaking of combustible, woo, training camp fights. The Jets had a brawl in camp over the weekend against Washington. The fight reportedly started when Jets corner Tremaine Johnson cheap shot at Washington tackle Morgan Moses. All right, see, put this in perspective, please. How big of a deal are training camp fights?
Man, if you bring the teams together in the NFL, guys are tired of practicing against their own guys. It's always some type of altercation. It's not something you'd like to see, but if you bring NFL teams together, you're going to see a couple of these. It's part of doing business and part of summer training camp.
This one got a little ugly in the regard. The fans started fighting each other in the stands as well. It flared up a few times, but one of the reasons, go ahead, C.
Oh, that's the Jets fans. That's the only way they're going to win. Jets fans, get a couple wins in the stands.
Got to get a win in the stands. I mean, listen, coaches tend to like these practices sometimes more than actual preseason games.
Yes.
Because you can do work and it's competitive. But you know something that is going to happen. This is on the more extreme end of a training camp fight just because of the number of players involved. It wasn't a lot of guys just walking away from it like one Chris Carter might have done in his playing days. Y'all can have that little training camp fight. I got places to be.
Yeah, no, you'll see me. I come up in this video.
Okay. All right, a few more training camp fights here. The Jags suspended Dante Fowler and Jalen Ramsey for a week for violating team rules. Fowler got into a fight at training camp. The fight was recorded by a reporter. Ramsey was not happy with the reporter, tweeting, "You know you messed up, right? LOL, if you want war, we got some for you. And I know the rest of you, you know who you are going to read this too. So just know, hashtag lame ass reporters." Nick, what do you make of this suspension?
I think a 1 week suspension for Jalen Ramsey tweeting that tells me like there is more to this than simply the tweet. That behind the scenes, the Jags have talked with Jalen about, listen, we love how intense you are. We love what a great player you are. But you are the best player on this football team, and we need you to keep it inside the dotted lines to a degree. And we need, whether that's with teammates, whether that's with the media, whatever it is, we can't have you being as exuberant, that's maybe the wrong word, as outspoken as you've been in the past. Because otherwise, a 1 week, not a one game suspension, 1 week, we'll see you a week from today. That's, what's that, a fifth of training camp? A fourth of training camp? That's significant. Now, I know he doesn't really need the work. He's a great player already, but it speaks to maybe a percolating bigger situation with this football team.
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. The 1 week that he does get suspended, though, I believe is a little more important week because they're going tomorrow to Minnesota. They play Minnesota Saturday, but they're going to Minnesota to practice, have joint practices with the Vikings. So I know their staff was looking forward to seeing Jalen Ramsey matched up against Thielen and Diggs for several days. So that work right there, he really could have used. But I think you're making a great point as far as the overall observation. You can't just consider this just to be one off like some of the other training camp fights, because you don't suspend a guy unless he does something really, really bad, unless there's been some type of warning system. I believe they have that there. Tom Coughlin runs that organization. Mm. Doug Marrone is a disciplinarian. They are not going to let this young defensive dominate team take their personalities, take over the franchise. So I could see that being part of the suspension. Also, Dante Fowler, he was already suspended this offseason for his conduct.
I don't mean to laugh. Dante Fowler is going to miss the first week of the season because he was driving. He got in a verbal altercation with a guy. He followed the guy into a parking lot and allegedly hit the guy, stepped on the guy's glasses, and then threw the guy's groceries into a lake. So for that reason, Dante Fowler's already going to miss week one of the season. You've got, and he's a guy that's also, by the way, unlike Jalen, been a little disappointing given his draft positioning. And his the thing that stuck out to me about Fowler, see, he wasn't fighting an offensive lineman. Dante Fowler was fighting Yannick Ngakoue. Those are two D linemen fighting each other, which struck me as a little odd. But you mentioned Coughlin.
Yes.
How much of this, Coughlin, you've told me stories about Coughlin. It was like your toes here, your back arched here. It wasn't, everyone says 5 minutes early and you're still late, but it was everything.
That's who Tom Coughlin was. Now, he made some slight adjustments with the Giants, was able to get those two Super Bowls, but Tom Coughlin is about discipline. And I can. No one has told me this, but I can guarantee you Tom Coughlin was disappointed in his departure with the New York Football Giants and the way that they acted without discipline. OBJ, the outburst on the sideline. People behind the scenes blame Tom Coughlin, and at no point in Tom Coughlin's career did he have players that acted that way. So to see him running this franchise, to see that this franchise is a lot like Carolina. Remember, Josh Norman got into the fight with Cam Newton at training camp. They didn't renew his contract when they had an opportunity. And Richard Sherman, what he and how he continued to say things with Pete Carroll and that team, it eroded the relationship that he had there in the locker room and there with the media. Him end up going away to San Francisco. So I think that people in the NFL, they've seen these other situations. In Jacksonville, they don't want that same behavior to continue with Jalen.
And what they don't have in Jacksonville that you had certainly in Seattle, and I would argue in Carolina, is a franchise quarterback who can be a calming force or a leader of men.
Yes.
In Jacksonville, like Blake Bortles, the quarterback, but the leaders of that team are on defense. And the leader of that team, it's him, it's Calais Campbell. They lost Aaron Colvin, one of their veteran corners. Like, they have A.J. Boye, but it's really him and Calais Campbell. You need them to act however you think is appropriate. They need to act as such. The Coughlin thing, though, I think is really intriguing, because the moment people remember and that Coughlin got heavily criticized for was the Josh Norman Odell Beckham fight, when people said, why didn't Odell get kicked out? And if he didn't get kicked out, why didn't Coughlin bench him? And Coughlin famously didn't bench him. And so I do feel like his fingerprints are on this to a degree, making sure he keeps things in line.
All right, moving along here. Question for you. Is it possible the Jets don't have a quarterback problem? I mean, it's funny to think there's a position the Jets aren't worried about, but number three overall pick Sam Darnold looked pretty good Friday night, throwing for 96 yards and a touchdown, and Teddy Bridgewater looked pretty good Friday night, leading the Jets to scores on both of his possessions. On Sunday, Darnold took more first-team reps in practice. CeCe, how much more does Sam Darnold have to do now if he wants to start week one?
Oh, he needs to be able to repeat it. He needs to be a little more consistent also in practice. Like, it's not over. The work is not done. I mean, my goodness, like 18 attempts throwing the football? No, that doesn't anoint him anything. He got off to a good start. The game plan they had around him was really good. and they took some chances throwing the ball down the field. I like the speed for which he played the game with, as far as him recognizing where he wanted to go with the ball and deciding to go there. Very, very accurate with the football. And also the line did a decent job as far as protecting him going forward. Will they have a running game? Will their playmakers be consistent enough to make enough plays? But I'm not surprised at all. I thought Sam Darnold was going to be a star in the NFL, and he is off to a good start. And it started in practice. He's having a good training camp, even though he was late, and got off to a good start in preseason game number one.
There's a reason he was considered the surest thing in this NFL draft. From the quarterback position, I should say. That of all the quarterbacks, he was considered the safest pick. Maybe not the upside of Baker, maybe not the exciting playmaking of Lamar, but the guy least likely to be a bust was Sam Darnold. And I don't know if he's going to start week one or not. You can make an argument that he should, because weeks four, five, six, they play some really tough defenses, and you'd like to see him get some experience before that. But you can also make an argument he's going to wait because they play their Thursday night game in week three. So it would be three games in a short period of time for him, 17 days, I think, if he does start week one. But I just want to go backwards a little bit and remind everyone how the Jets got him. They had the sixth pick of the draft, and they decided they were going to package that pick with three second-rounders, two this year and one next year, to move up to get the guy that I believe they would have taken if they had the first overall pick of the draft. So Jets fans last year were kind of upset when they were winning games because they knew they weren't going to be a playoff team. They didn't really, and they wanted, I think, Darnold, but they wanted the number one pick to get the quarterback. They ended up winning enough games to have the sixth pick, and they still got the guy that I think they would have drafted had they gone 1-15. So I think he's going to be a very quality player in this league. They just have to weigh, is it harder for him to deal with three games in 17 days? It would be three games in 10 days, pardon me. Three games over the first week and a half, two and a half weeks of the season, pardon me. Or is it harder for him to deal with his first NFL competition being the really tough stretch of defenses they have in the month of October? Like, that's for the Jets staff to figure out, because they obviously don't have the offensive line or the receivers.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't become very, very difficult when you have young quarterbacks. If a young quarterback is close to the same as the veteran quarterback, it doesn't make sense not to put the young guy in there and get him. Even though you're playing in a short window, you're playing a number of games, but that's also three games he wouldn't get experience. So. Sure. If they're close, you're going to go with the young guy, because Teddy Bridgewater, Josh McCown, these guys have been in the league for years. And if a rookie is playing as good as you after 4 or 5 weeks of training camp, it's a tremendous indicator for the coaching staff who they're going to go with.
So does Bridgewater then become the tradable asset in all of this?
I think people get carried away trying to trade. The Jets have been looking for quarterbacks for years. Now, if you do have two on the roster, why trade one away? Like, do we think Sam Darnold is not going to get injured? All right? Like, we don't think he's going to get nicked? Like, with
so
that
you'll
offensive
keep three
line?
With Josh McCown, then? Or you think they should?
Josh McCown is there as a mentor. He is not there to play football. Like, his money is guaranteed. Teach him the playbook. Teach him how to be a pro. But Teddy Bridgewater, the longer you keep Teddy Bridgewater, the more value he has, because right now, no one's looking for a quarterback. So why try to trade him? And it's not like you got a surplus of talent. Like, get as much talent on the roster before you try to trade some people away.
And it should be noted, the reason Jenna brings up Teddy is, I mean, we saw him preseason action. First time we've seen Teddy take significant snaps.
Yeah, they were trying to trade Teddy before the preseason
game. They said his value, it's got to be careful. But Teddy played well, is what I was going to say.
Great.
People didn't watch it. He was 7 of 8, 85 yards, a touchdown, a nearly perfect quarterback rating. That was good to see just as a football fan, even though it's preseason. I get it. It's good to see as a football fan, because Teddy, we didn't know if he was ever going to get in last year. When he finally did get in, he threw an interception right on his first play. It was a tipped ball interception. So to see Teddy get out on the football field and have some level of success, that was really good to see.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side, are the Denver Broncos quarterback struggles bad news for John Elway? We'll explain next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Caney joining the show, getting excited.
Hey,
weeks
absolutely.
Away from the season starting.
It's about to go down, Jen.
It's about to go down.
I can't wait for week one of the regular season.
Right?
Can't wait.
What?
Can't get here fast enough.
What up,
Steve? Man, you're going to get Jenna all screwed up, man. You start teaching her that.
The countdown? The countdown.
Is it not 3 weeks? Am I off?
No,
is it 2 weeks?
Right. It's going down. Now, watch how that gets into
She's going to try to use that in the wrong
place. I got to go to the bathroom. It's going down.
It's getting tougher, right?
Probably could have kept that one to yourself.
Awesome. Thank you for the vote of confidence.
You got it, Jenna.
Awesome.
I got your back
working
here.
On the
You're
lingo.
Use it perfectly later in the show.
Well, let's get Probably ready not. For this to go down right now. Quick recap for those of you tuning in for the first time today. I was seated front row center on the Case Keenum bandwagon last season as Keenum helped carry the Vikings to the NFC Championship game. Broncos sign him and, well, let's just say, there's room on the bandwagon. Yes. Keenum completing only one of his four passes Saturday against the Vikings for 5 yards. Chris Canty, how much does John Elway have riding on Case Keenum this year?
Well, he's got a lot riding on Case Keenum from the standpoint of you're not going to be very competitive unless Case Keenum puts together a really good season, something comparable to what we saw with him in Minnesota last year. The only problem with that is there's a lot less talent on that Denver Broncos team than there is on the Minnesota Vikings. And I'm looking at the offensive side of the ball, and you do like some pieces that the Broncos have, but the sum of the parts is not equal to what Case Keenum had in Minnesota. So I'm looking at what they're doing as a team. I don't look at the Denver Broncos as a team that's going to be very competitive in the AFC West, and that's not a strong division to start with. But they're in this situation now where they went 5-11 last year, in large part because the general manager hasn't drafted well. John Elway's last couple of drafts have been terrible. His best drafts were the first two that he had when he became the general manager of the Denver Broncos. And guess what happens when you draft well? You're a very competitive team. They won the Super Bowl 3 years later in 2015. So, I mean, it's a situation now. This is a roster that's depleted of talent in large part because the general manager hasn't done well. They won the Super Bowl. What happens when you win the Super Bowl? People want your coaches and your players. And so there's been an exodus from the Denver Broncos in the talent on that roster, and John Elway hasn't done a great job of replacing it.
And whether it's fair or not, if you're the general manager and you played quarterback, we are going to pay extra attention to the quarterbacks that you pick.
We assume you can pick them up.
When he got there, they had Tim Tebow, and he did an excellent job of eschewing Tebow, getting Peyton Manning to sign. They're a little fortunate nature in that the Houston Texans didn't want Peyton Manning. The Broncos were Peyton's second choice behind the Texans. They get him. They make a Super Bowl almost instantly. They win one, as you mentioned. But since he got there, he's drafted 5 quarterbacks. Brock Osweiler, Zach Dysart, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, who, by the way, we're going to talk about Keenum, but Lynch was in this game. He was dreadful. Dreadful. And that was a first-round pick. And then Chad Kelly this year. Now, if you want to throw out the 7th-rounders, that's fine. But you've spent 2 premium draft picks, a second and a first, on Osweiler and Lynch, neither of whom, to me, appear to even be NFL backups. And what's the standard in Denver? Well, they had a losing season last year. The last time they had back-to-back losing seasons in Denver, which is insane, was 1971-1972. This is a franchise. It's not just that they won the 2 Super Bowls with Elway, went to 5 with him, went to 2 more with Peyton Manning. There is not an organization, you could argue, in sports that has gone, 45 years without ever having a downtime. They've had a mediocre time, but they haven't had back-to-back losing seasons in almost 50 years. Like, that's the standard of the organization. Elway helped create that standard as a player, and now he's seeing the pressure, not the pressure, but the penalty of having to live up to it as the GM.
It's one of the great franchises. I think they lead the NFL still in number of consecutive sellouts that they have. They have great fan support. They have tremendous support from the ownership, even though there's some confusion or some things behind the scene about the ownership. The ownership is rich. They're not cash poor, so they're strong. They got a great stadium. So it's all set up for John Elway. All the history with the Broncos that's good, John Elway's been involved.
Yep.
That either as a player, when he was almost had the resume of Jim Kelly, but no, got that turned around, getting those 2 Super Bowls late in his career. And also, I don't think people give him enough credit because getting Peyton Manning to Denver, they were not the favorite Peyton Manning.
No.
And Peyton had tremendous question marks as far as his neck after several surgeries when he left the Colts. So I believe that John Elway, his history in Denver is secure. Now, he's just done a bad job with quarterbacks. And no one should think that throwing the football calculates to be able to pick quarterbacks. All right, and John has not done a good job of picking quarterbacks, but because of the support that he has there and because of what he did with Peyton Manning, getting them to those two Super Bowls, that gives him the ability that they're not going to get rid of John Elway. He's going to be able to make a mistake after mistake, I believe, because of his name there in the Denver area.
Well, Chris, let's talk about what they do have this year. Let's just talk about Case Keenum and Paxton Lynch, if those are your one and two guys. First of all, it was one outing, so let's not throw Case Keenum under the bus just yet. And that was it. But just talk to me just a little bit about what he's got there at that quarterback position.
Well, here's what I'll say. He's got two pretty good receivers in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. So if those guys...
No, they got one receiver. They got Emmanuel Sanders. We don't know what we got in Demaryius.
He might be trending the wrong
way. I mean, he's had two poor seasons, if we were just being honest. Emmanuel Sanders right now is the only one we would say a number one right today.
Oh, agreed. But, I mean, I'm looking at it through the lens of, okay, they're serviceable receivers,
yes,
if you have a quarterback that's competent and that can get them the ball. The offensive line, they retooled it on the fly. They got Garrett Bowles with a high draft pick last year. Mm-hmm. They've got Matt Paradis at center. Ron Leary, they bought over from the Cowboys. Jared Valdir from the Cardinals. They've got a serviceable offensive line. There's a question mark at the running back position with Devontae Booker. You don't know what you got there.
They
the tight end position.
CJ Anderson.
They moved on
position.
From CJ yeah. Anderson. There's a little bit to be desired from the tight end position. So it's not the supporting cast that Case had in Minnesota, and that's the big part of it. Also, I look at the defensive side of the ball. I don't think that Broncos defense is on the level talent-wise that the Minnesota Vikings defense was. They've got some playmakers, but it's not the same. So I don't know, with the offensive and the defensive units that Case Keenum is going to have to work with, that they're going to be complementary enough to be able to elevate the play of their quarterback. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think Case is a marginal starter in the NFL. I think if he is quarterback in your franchise, you are always looking to, how can I upgrade the quarterback position? He hadn't been consistent. He throws the ball in the coverage. But I wouldn't overreact to playing against the Vikings because the Vikings know him. You know what the Vikings did to him? We're going to mush rush him. All right, we're going to make him throw the ball from in the pocket. We're going to play man-to-man on the outside and suffocate these wide receivers because they have practice against Case.
That's a good
all right?
point.
They see Case. So that's exactly what they did against the Denver Broncos. So the Vikings are one of the best teams in the league. So I wouldn't overreact to just that limited number of plays that I saw.
It's totally fair. But what's also true is because if Case is just a marginal starting quarterback, then Elway did make another error at the position as far as he gave him $25 million guaranteed over 2 years. This isn't just a one-year commitment. This is next year if they want to move on from Case Keenum. He still costs them $10 million cap dollars next season. We were just talking about Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I know Teddy had injury questions, and Case was better than Teddy last year. Teddy was $500,000 guaranteed. And you don't have – I know Paxton Lynch is on the roster, but they know, he's only on the roster because he was a first-round pick.
That's it.
Paxton, if you go out there and you spike the ball every time, you have a passer rating of 39.6. Paxton's was 22.2 yesterday, this weekend. Like, he played as poorly of a half of football as you can really play at that position. And so where the Broncos are right now, their silver lining for the season is they got Bradley Chubb. I don't think anyone thought going into the draft that the fifth overall pick, they were going to be able to get Bradley Chubb. A lot of people thought that was the best defensive player in the draft. They can pair him with Von Miller and potentially have a ferocious pass rush. They still have Chris Harris, even though they don't have Aqib Talib anymore. But to be able to win the way they're accustomed to with what I think is going to be not only a bottom half, but probably a bottom third of the league offense, you need to have a dominant Jags of 2017, Broncos of 2015 type of defense. Even with Bradley Chubb, I don't think that's what they have there anymore.
All right. Chris, stick around. Coming up, the Giants know what they need to do to be successful. We'll tell you what they said. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty, talking about your former team, Chris, the Giants. Despite seeing some flashes from number two overall pick Saquon Barkley, the offense struggled in its preseason loss to the Browns on Thursday. New head coach Pat Shurmur said the Giants have, quote, plenty to learn moving forward with the season less than 4 weeks away. Canty, what's the key to the Giants' success on offense this season?
It has to be the offensive line. That's where it starts for me, because had it not been for the Seattle Seahawks, the Giants would have had the worst offensive line in the NFL in 2017. So they put a lot of money, a lot of draft capital into retooling that offensive line, signed Nate Solder, at the time made him the highest paid tackle in the NFL. They drafted Will Hernandez with the high second round pick. So the idea is they're going to try to get this thing back on track with an explosive offense. The offensive line just has to be average. It has to be serviceable. If it's not, it's going to be a struggle for the Giants. They got great skill position players. I mean, you can stack it up. Man for man, they're one of the best groups at the skill position players in the NFL.
But it all starts there on that offensive line.
It all starts with the offensive line, because if you can't block anybody, then the quarterback can't get the ball to those receivers. The running game is going to be a struggle.
Well, let's go ahead.
And if they can't block anybody, then Eli's got no shot. Like, that was what, as critical as I've been about Eli, that's what was not his fault last year, was how many times, by the time he could look to his first option, if that guy wasn't open, when he's trying to look to his second, he's having to fall down because a sack is coming.
He led the NFL in pass attempts with less than 2.5 seconds from the pocket.
It's the exact point. It is the perfect statistical note to the point I'm making. Like, you watched it and you saw Eli was constantly under duress. So I looked into 2 years ago, when the offensive line was a little bit better, when Odell was healthy, when the Giants now, that was a team whose strength was their defense, but Eli played well enough to get them double-digit wins, get them to the playoffs. And I said, how were they winning these games? Eli was excellent in the first half of games and then good enough while the defense suffocated you in the second half of games. Also, in their wins, Eli played clean football games. In their losses is when he had a disproportionate number of his total interceptions for the season. I think it was 16 2 years ago, were in those six losses that they had. So, like, that's the path for them, is that they jump out to an early lead. Eli plays a clean football game, because this is the most, in my eyes, offensive talent Eli Manning's ever had. It's the most offensive talent of a Giants team, potentially, in my memory. Because as you say, when they've won, it's because they've had great running game and great defense. They got better wide receivers on this team and pass catchers than I remember.
They have a good tight end who has some potential in Evan Engram, okay? They have a superstar in Odell Beckham. I don't want to get into this is the best group, because the other guys, I mean, what have they proven?
Can Sterling Shepard. Saquon Barkley is the pass catcher, though? Like, it's part of the math there?
Yeah, but that's unproven, though.
Okay, sure.
I mean, are we going to transfer his highlights from Penn State? Like, Odell Beckham is the only dependable receiver that they have. And from a dependability standpoint, I would go with Evan Engram. He stepped up last year, even more so than Sterling Shepard. People talk about Sterling Shepard as if he has all these 1,000-yard seasons now. I still need to see some things, all right? Because I'm going to tell you, like Barkley, all right? Sterling Shepard, where'd he go to school?
Oklahoma.
How many receivers from Oklahoma have done well in the NFL? Huh.
Not a whole.
Wait on it.
It won't be. Okay.
Wait on it.
So these things, they do matter to me. Where he went to school, how does that transfer over? Because what says that he's going to be the guy that turn around the reputation of Oklahoma receivers? I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I'm just saying that he should do it on the field before we give him credit for it. Last year, Evan Engram, I thought, was spectacular with no type of help. Bad offensive line, which all those stats and stuff are reported. He had some amazing plays. He was able to stay focused when they were totally out of contention.
By the midway point of the season, he was their number one receiving option. Odell's out. Brandon Marshall's out. He was their number one receiving threat as a second-year tight end.
And besides their right tackle, which Eric Flowers, like, we can't not have a Giants discussion without talking about him. So, for me, these other supporting players become prominent. How good is Cody Lattimore? He might end up starting outside. Now, he was a disappointment in Denver. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys are saying this is the best wide receiving core. We don't know what we're going to get out of him. He needs to have a good season on the outside. So Shepard, which I believe he is primarily a slot receiver, so he can stay in the slot. And I believe another one, the big question mark, is my dude from Ohio State. Not Eli Manning, Eli Apple. At cornerback. If all of these guys are able to put together some seasons, then the Giants are going to have a chance. So we're talking about, oh, man, what about the offense? Oh, I'm not worried. Man, they got huge question marks at positions where they have spent high draft capital on potential, and we need to see that potential played out on the field, Chris.
Well, CeCe, let's start with the one that's not a question mark, and you said it off the top, Odell Beckham Jr., proven commodity. To me, he's the one that sets the table for the entire offense just because he dictates front and coverage. So you can't drop that eighth man down in the box to slow down the running game just because you got to make sure you got a safety over top of Odell Beckham Jr. So yes. With that being said, you should have one-on-one opportunities for the other pass catchers in that offense. Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard, even Saquon Barkley to a degree.
This is what they're going to see. They're going to see a seven-man box. They're not going to let Barkley beat them, and they know their offensive line is not good. So they're going to put a number count to make the Giants make a decision. Either Eli Manning going to throw the ball to Engram or one of those other receivers, because seven plus two on Beckham, it's one-on-one coverage on the rest of the field. It should be that simple for the Giants this season.
It should be, and that's why I say it comes down to the offensive line being able to provide time for Eli Manning to work the football to those other guys. Because Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard, they're not a lot of pass concepts where they're going to be the number one option. So it's going to take Eli a little bit of time, more than he had last year. The running game, Saquon Barkley, they're going to be inside, outside zone. It's not going to be one of those old school lead weak power old type of gap blocking schemes. They're going to use the zone running game because Saquon Barkley is going to have to be his own blocker in a lot of situations. And you saw that in the first run that he had against the Cleveland Browns in the preseason game. So we all have to go back to the offensive line. And really, the preseason is going to be an important time for this group because they marched out four new starters from the group a year ago. So they need that time to gel, to develop that chemistry. So much of what the Giants' success is going to be on the offensive line because the offense has to set the table. You saw the issues with the defense in the preseason game against the Browns. No pass rush to speak of. Coverage was suspect. So it's got to be with the offense winning the day for the Giants, and it starts up front.
But wait, how do you feel about the offensive line? Quick question. Of the three marquee names that we're all going to talk about throughout the season, of Saquon and Eli and Odell, which one of their personal success is going to correlate more to team success? Who has to have the bigger of the three breakout big years in order for this team to be successful?
Oh, to me, there's no question. Eli's got to play have a good year.
Yes.
Like, I mean, to me, there's no doubt about
it. If Eli's cut run up over, it's going to ride into Odell and Barkley.
And them.
Like,
yeah. And if Eli has a good year, if Eli's even in contention for the Pro Bowl, the Giants will be in contention for the biggest year-over-year win improvement.
Yes.
Last year, the biggest improvement was the Jags went from 3 wins to 10 wins. If Eli has a good season, the Giants absolutely could be in that same bucket. Go from 3 wins to 10 wins. Like, that's a thing that could happen, but it all... I think Eli can play poorly and Odell can still have 1,400 yards. I think Eli can play poorly and Saquon can still rush for 1,200. But it's everything else. It's how much does Evan Engram improve in year two? It's Sterling Shepard. They spent a second-round pick on him. And you're right that I am maybe more attracted to the flashes of momentary brilliance I've seen from him than actual sustained success. They obviously thought they needed more help last year. It's one of the reasons they brought in Brandon Marshall and tried to put Sterling in the slot. But, like, if Eli plays well, that also means the offensive line was better than it was last year. Like, he is going to be the barometer for this football team, no question about it in my eyes.
All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up on the other side, Hugh Jackson has an interesting method of punishment for one Cleveland Browns wide receiver. That is next on First Things First. All right, let's move on to the Cleveland Browns now. I see that. Get this. Receiver Antonio Callaway was recently arrested for marijuana possession. Now, on most teams, punishment would be not playing in a game. Unless, of course, you're the Cleveland Browns, where apparently punishment is the exact opposite. The projected starting receiver got a ton of playing time. Ton of playing time. His coach, Hugh Jackson, had an interesting explanation why.
I was trying to make him play the whole game if we could. I didn't want him to come out because that was part of the consequence of what he'd been through, and he knows that. That's what it was. Either you sit him or make him play. I thought it was better to make him play. Make him play as long as he could. There was a couple of times he kept waving to come out. We said, no, stay in there.
The whole team's going to get arrested for marijuana. Imagine anyone that wants to start this season.
Well, that is, I mean, you're joking, but one of the best moments I've ever seen you on television, this is before I knew you. And it was talking.
Yeah, been going downhill since.
It was talking about an unfortunate situation. I'm talking about the Adrian Peterson thing, and you were impassioned, and you made the point. You were saying, take him off the field. It's the only thing some guys are going to understand is having the game taken away from them. And that's what we often hear coaches do. Is the worst punishment is to not let a guy play. So why would this be the punishment?
Well, in Cleveland, their staff, John Dorsey. and Hugh, they met with Callaway after the incident. He actually got pulled over, traffic violation, which they found out he was in violation with driving with a suspended driver's license, and he had a small amount of marijuana in the car. Now, because they believe that he wasn't smoking, and he says it was a family member who had the car. His car was shipped recently. And the reason why they would believe him is because he's already in stage one of the drug program. Well, how do I know that? He had a diluted sample at the NFL Combine, which automatically puts you in stage one, which automatically you have mandatory testing. So in him getting stopped, the league probably already tested him, know that that test was negative for THC. So I can understand what Hugh and them are doing, because they believe that he made a mistake in being in a car that had marijuana, but they believe that he didn't flunk a drug test because he's already in the program. I've seen this happen before. They leave you out there, and it is punishment because you're so tired, you can actually get hurt. But it's a good learning tool that football coaches use in an instance like this. There is some guilt, but also they want there to be some other type of punishment, and that's to leave you in the game. And why you're tired? Because you don't have the type of conditioning that you're going to have later in the season.
And Callaway, by the way, needs to play football. He didn't play last year at Florida. So
yes.
And maybe he'll be suspended by the NFL for this because he's already in this program. Maybe not. But regardless, I understand why they wouldn't want to suspend him, wouldn't want to make him miss more football. Here's my only problem, and this is one of the downsides, I suppose, for a team of being on Hard Knocks. We get more information than we otherwise would have. We know that, much to the consternation of some of the assistant coaches on the Cleveland Browns, they have a program in place where they will remove guys from practice preemptively. We know that they will try to take preventative measures to make sure guys stay healthy. You're telling me that doing this, the one downside to doing this is
sure.
guys can get hurt.
Getting hurt.
Is that if a guy's that
yeah,
exhausted?
Absolutely.
And so that seems to run a scan to what
you do realize you do have the training staff watching it. Now, the one thing about Hard Knocks, you got to be careful. People are not familiar with the medical provisions in pro football now. That being on the sideline, they're very, very complicated. How many neurologists they have there, independent of the team. So right now, if you watch an NFL practice and how they do NFL practices, it's totally different. You would think, wow, how are we going to have an NFL team? It's totally, totally different. So I would be careful as far as the Browns are concerned. The Browns are doing the right thing. All right? This has been done before. All right, we know about Ben Hugh. All assistant coaches want the players out there. All head coaches want the guys healthy. So that balance there, you're always going to have staff members saying, I think the guy should play, because old school football and the way it was done, it can't be done that way anymore.
Do the Browns concern you at all? I mean, we're only like a week and change into the preseason, and Josh Gordon is not in camp.
Oh, the wide receivers.
Callaway's already got an issue.
They traded Corey Coleman.
They're thinking of bringing Dez Bryant in. It just sounds like, for a team that really wants to stay on the straight and narrow and focused on maybe winning, say, a single game this season, they just seem like maybe they are in a bit of a disarray. At least, yes, on the receiving core.
They're not in disarray.
Okay.
All right? Antonio Callaway was drafted in the fourth round for a reason. He was one of the top five wide receivers in the draft, but had a number of problems at the University of Florida that led for him being dismissed from the team. So for him to have some type of issue, no. Since Josh Gordon didn't come to camp, they haven't talked about him any. So to say that the Browns are in disarray, that wouldn't be fair to what's going on with the Browns and everything.
Maybe use a different word than disarray. A part of the team that I thought a month ago was potentially going to be their biggest strength, their receiving core, it now looks like Jarvis Landry and a bunch of questions.
And Jarvis Landry's also had some inflammatory comments.
Yeah, but he's been great.
My
I'm not worried
about it. It's been a highlight.
Well, but that part I'm not worried about.
Well, this is the most the Browns have been talked about in a long, long
That's
time.
For sure.
Okay, let's not forget, all right? They won one game in the last two freaking seasons. You need talented players to be able to change that. Jarvis Landry is part of a positive change. John Dorsey, the general manager, is part of a positive change. Us having the Browns on this show as much is a positive change. So this team is a lot better, and they have gotten better at quarterback than anyone in the National Football League in trading for Tyrod Taylor and drafting Baker Mayfield. That was not a home run. All right? People were still shocked that Baker Mayfield was the first pick in the draft. He came from a long way down in the bottom part of that first round to convince them to be in that first part, the first pick.
I want people to understand, when CeCe says that wasn't a home run, I think you mean it wasn't considered like a sure thing going into it.
No, absolutely.
It was when he said, not that it wasn't a home run, that it won't work out, that it was going into the draft.
No, I was a believer in Baker a long time ago.
Right. That's why I wanted to clarify, because you've been a proponent of Baker Mayfield for as long as anybody I know. It wasn't the predicted pick the day of the season and that Baker Mayfield was going to go number one. They took a risk there. I agree they upgraded at quarterback. My only point was, going into the year, I'm like, oh, Jarvis is your one, Josh Gordon's your two, Corey Coleman and Callaway will fight for that 3-4 spot, and now all of a sudden Corey Coleman's traded, Josh Gordon's MIA, Antonio Callaway's in the news for the wrong reasons. Like, Jarvis is the one steady thing they have on the team.
Yeah, you should always have question marks with Josh Gordon. Besides Von Miller, no player has been suspended for a year and gone on to have successful seasons and have steady performance. You can check the NFL for that. Check the guys that have been suspended. After you get suspended, watch their career. They don't go up. Right. Typically, they go down.
All right, take a break. Coming up, hey, how close is Tiger Woods to winning his 15th major? Pretty, pretty, pretty close. Next on First Things First. Time for some stories.
The most important part of listening is what they don't say. Yeah, you were good at that part of listening, Kobe. What you don't say, I hear.
Nailed it. Stories to start your morning. The Browns continue to court Dez Bryant. Tyrod Taylor said that would be awesome when asked about the Browns adding Dez. CC, would Dez be an awesome fit in Cleveland?
I think he would be. I think that, man, he is hungry. I think the wide receiver coach, he's got a history of dealing with dynamic wide receivers at LSU with the Giants and OBJ, and now they're with Jarvis. So, yes, I think he would be. And the quarterback, if the quarterback likes it, typically it's good.
But does it matter so much if Tyrod likes it or more if Baker likes it? It would be because Baker's the quarterback.
Right now, Baker's not going to be quarterback in the Browns for the next 6 weeks.
Okay.
All right? The Browns are committed to Tyrod. That's what's important. Baker can adjust to him. Baker can throw the football.
I think it'd be great for Dez, for sure. And if any offensive coordinator is going to also help teach Dez the best way to be a wide receiver, it would be Todd Haley. Like, so I think for Dez, it'd be a great fit.
Yes.
For the Browns, I'd want to have a long heart-to-heart with him before we sign him.
No, everyone knows Baker is the future star. Don't mess with the kid from Oklahoma.
All right, Jets had a brawl in camp over the weekend against Washington. The fight reportedly started when Jets corner Trumaine Johnson cheap-shotted Washington tackle Morgan Moses. Is this a big deal, CC, these fights in training camp?
As long as no one gets hurt, because that's what you're really trying to come out. These joint practices, man, guys get a little chippy. You get tired of practice against your own teammates during training camp, so it is nice to have joint practices. It's part of the NFL. You try not to get in any skirmishes like this, but this is dangerous. You hope no one comes out with injuries. It's going to happen, though, if you get grown football players
together. And when it's that many people involved, it's a little surprising no one got seriously hurt. No one fell down. No one got stepped on. Like, typically, training camp fights are a couple guys fighting, a couple guys breaking it up, and a couple guys like CeCe just kind of walking off field looking.
Yeah, I'm right there like Josh Reed. I'm hey, man. Y'all handle that.
But, I mean, this was like 30 on 30, and then it, by the way, also inspired some of the fans to start fighting.
If I know anything about the Jets, man, they lost.
Oh, man. Man, the Jets taking L's left and right.
Finally, a year ago, Tiger was all but done. He had some scandal in his life. He had some back surgeries. Little did we know, Tiger was preparing really for one of the greatest comeback stories in all of sports. Yesterday at the PGA Championship, he was just lights out, shooting a 64, finishing 14 under for the tournament. He shot his lowest score ever in the final round of a major, finishing second behind Brooks Koepka, who doesn't work out or anything. Here is Tiger after the round on Sunday.
I didn't know how many tournaments I'd play this year or if I'd even play. And so each tournament brought about its own challenges. And I didn't know what the number was going to be this year. I didn't know how I was going to play. And so at the beginning of the year, if you said, yeah, I would have a chance, legit chance to win the last two major championships, with what swing? I didn't have a swing at the time. You know, I had no speed. I didn't have a golf swing. I didn't have... you know, my short game wasn't quite there yet. You know, my putting was okay, but, you know, I hadn't played in 2 years. And so It's been a hell of a process this year. But I'm in uncharted territory because no one's ever had a fused spine hitting it like I'm hitting it. So I've had to kind of figure this out on my own. And it's been really, really hard. It's a lot harder than people think. And I'm just very pleased at what I've done so far. And now, I mean, to be part of the Ryder Cup conversation, going from where I've come from to now in the last year, it's been pretty cool.
How many times do I continue to say it's pleasant? He's so pleasant to listen to. Here's a guy who came in second place, one of the most competitive athletes you'll ever meet. And he was okay with it because he knows where he came. He's got really good perspective on how far he's come.
He's high-fiving fans, Jenna, during a major, which
he doesn't associate with fans. Yeah. If anything, he's cursing them out because they're disturbing him. But see, how close is Tiger to looking like the Tiger that we used to know?
Well, for one, you make a great point and have throughout his whole comeback, how different his interviews was, how his on-the-course demeanor. And Nick, he follows Tiger and is obsessed with Tiger, a lot like myself. Yesterday before the round, I thought was very, very telling because even at four shots back at 8 under, he arrives at the golf course. He's got his hat on backwards.
Yeah.
He's got the dark glasses on. Like, Tiger Woods is never going to do that on a Sunday. He was very stiff, very regimented, very insulated. Even the people around him, like, they know, man, don't mess with Tiger. He has this super-duper focus. And now he's very open. He's appreciative of the game of golf and his ability. He said it. No one has hit the ball with a fused back and played on the tour. So no one can do what he's been able to do. So it's been remarkable competing on Sunday in the last two majors when he really didn't know if he was going to ever be able to play soccer with his kids. So he's had an amazing season. He's very close to winning. He couldn't overcome the -3 bogey on the first hole to start the championship, double bogey on the second hole, same way he started the U.S. Open, which he didn't recover from and didn't make the cut. And this one, he was able to come back from. So he is very, very close to winning and winning in a big way. I think what's important is how he finishes this season. And if he can get through this golf season without any type of setback, that he has the offseason, and then when we start 2019, I think it's 230-something days until they get to Augusta.
238.
Yeah, I believe he's going to win before he gets to Augusta. And then at Augusta, he will be the favorite to win that. So I believe the people that thought he wasn't going to win a major, they're realizing now they were wrong. He didn't lose yesterday's PGA, the 100th PGA Championship.
Brooks won.
Brooks, man, he snatched that golf tournament.
He was tremendous. If you going into Sunday, I was talking to you. I said, I think he needs a 64. I said, a 64, I think at the it might win it outright, and I think it forces a playoff. And it, I mean, 64, solo second, but Brooks Koepka was just fantastic. I question, you know, how close is he to being the old Tiger? The thing is this. The old Tiger played golf at a higher level than anyone's ever played it. Now, people can say Jack's the greatest ever because of the totality of it, but yes. Apex Tiger is the greatest golfer we've ever seen, I think, with a wide margin, given the field he was up against, given the fact he was doing some of that with inferior equipment because of his deal with Nike. Like, there were so many things that made that special. So he, but he doesn't have to be that or even that close to that to win a major. Where right now, he already is the best player in the tour on Saturdays. He's one of the best players in the tour as far as approach on the green. Front, what he did on the front nine yesterday, no other player on tour could do, where you don't hit a single fairway, you get out of the front nine in 10 total putts, and you end up -3 on a front nine where you don't hit a fairway. Like, he was excellent.
What we really have to look at is what can Tiger do over the next 5 years? He's 42 years old now, turns 43 December the 30th.
Yep.
So over the next 5 years, if he plays in, there's 20 potential majors he can play in. If he's healthy enough to say he can play in 15 of those, how many of those can he win? And if you look at the Tiger we saw in the last two majors, if that guy is going to show up, then he's got to build a chance. He's going to have a chance to win a couple of those.
And I think if you watch nothing else other than Tiger on the last hole and the last putt and the way he reacted to sinking that last putt, that famous, you know, fist pump, air pump, I mean, he was so excited, and there was such this sense of almost like relief, like I feel it. I feel like my game's coming back.
His final four holes, he made one terrible shot. to drive on 17. He birdies 15. His approach on 16, or his tee shot on 16, is basically a kick in for birdie there. 17, the tee shot was disastrous, and that kind of ended the tournament for him. But he's still on 17, hit a very tough 12-footer to save par. And then on 18, hit the putt he had to hit to where, man, if Brooks hits one out of bounds, I mean, he knew he had to get to 1,400 to have any shot. And he got there. Like this, and for people that think Chris is overstating it by saying, how many majors can he win? In the last two majors, no player on the tour has been better in relation to par. Nobody, now, he didn't win either one of them. But he had, without winning, the best cumulative performance over the last two majors from the British Open to the PGA. I think he was 18 under, which is better than anybody else.
One thing he has now that he didn't have before the summer approach, he knows he can do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got that. He knows in his brain, after not hitting the fairway and shooting 3 under 32.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's just you can't play the way he played and create the types of shots that he did. I'm just glad that people were able to see. Now, with the different tools we have in golf to be able to monitor the trajectory of the shot, how far the ball carries, we're able to see some of the classic, because no one hits the ball higher and no one can move it left to right, right to left, better than Tiger Woods with his irons. If he's able to straighten out his woods, we are going to see some spectacular golf.
But I think what you said is key. If he can get through this season healthy and take all that talent that he's got back and put it into next year and start fresh,
I think he really won himself a spot on the Ryder Cup, too,
no doubt this weekend.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. Back to football now. Dak Prescott had a solid preseason debut, which included a 12-yard scramble to keep a drive alive on third down. When asked if he had an issue with Dak running in preseason games, head coach Jason Garrett said, quote, "We tell him to go play." CeCe, how much does Dak need to run to be an effective quarterback?
Man, sometimes the defense, that's what they're going to give him. He's got to be able to tuck it and do it. We're in a strange position how we treat quarterbacks. You know, we want Dak to be able to sit in the pocket and be a lot better thrower. And now he pulls out of the pocket, generates a big play for his team, and now people are like, I don't need him to be running the football. What do you want him to do? We need Dak to win football games. And if that's with his arm, if that's with his legs, that's what he's going to have to do. He's not a quarterback that we can rely on his arm. But what quarterback we tell them don't run at all? Is there one in the league?
Tom Brady, maybe. That's it.
Even Tom runs at the right time. You're like, right. We learn to run at the right time. But what's more important is we want his natural instincts, because his natural instincts take over. He's won a lot of football games doing that. I don't want him second guessing. It's hard enough to transition to a pocket passer. I don't want him questioning his decision making running the football. Denny Green used to always tell the quarterback, listen, man, you're driving the car. Look, you might get bumped. Just don't crash the car, all right? Because you're going to get hit as a quarterback, and that's something we have to understand. But we put quarterbacks in this position where we don't want them to run, we don't want them to stay in the pocket, and unless you're Tom Brady and everything, we're going to criticize your decision-making once you decide to leave the pocket. It's necessary in this game when you're an athletic quarterback to use your legs, and I have seen Dak only utilize his legs to his advantage. And I don't think he's been reckless running.
And I think it's a part of his game he can improve on and do more of. I mean, this is a big guy. Like, Dak is not a blazing fast quarterback. And at Mississippi State, he didn't make his money running. But he's built in a way that he can handle more punishment than your average quarterback can. Yeah. Not just because he's young, but because of how thick he is in his upper body.
Right. What do we tell Russell Wilson? Because they have very similar body types.
Right.
All right. What do we tell Russell Wilson? We tell him to stop running?
No.
I mean, imagine if we took that away from Russell's game. I believe it's harder to defend the guy. It brings the RPOs, like they are real when you have a running quarterback. We saw the RPOs working for Nick Foles. I mean, who he going to fool? Like, he's not going to run an RPO and everything. So I believe it's necessary to Dak's skill set.
And I'm going to add one other part. Because, the Cowboys have no wide receiver people feel like they have to double. And they have, I feel like they're going to in times. We always talk about 8 men in the box. We talk about how the defense is going to defend Zeke. What about on passing situations? They're going to face a lot of man-to-man. A lot of situations where the opposing team is like, you know what, we think our corners are better than your wide receivers. We're going to spend more of our personnel guarding the run. The best time to run the football is if the defense is in man-to-man. I have the quarterback run the football, I should say. Because we talked to this last year. Their backs are to you, and all of a sudden, you don't have anything open, but you've got...
You escape that box.
You got that open space. So, like, the Cowboys, of course, will face some zone coverage, but there's going to be times where defensive coordinators say, Allen Hurns doesn't scare us. Galloway doesn't scare us. And so we're going to play man-to-man, and that's when Dak can take advantage of it.
One thing I taught Dante Culpepper, there's a lot of teams, because Randy and I, the only way they could double both of us at the same time was to play us two-man. That's where the cornerback played underneath and the safeties helped over top. And we would tell Dante, at the top of your drop, look to your receiver and run the football. It will make them stop playing two-man. Now, as you mentioned, Dallas Cowboys play them man-to-man. Put 7 in the box, crowd them at the line of scrimmage. Yep. Dak can get them out of that. So if they play man-to-man, we need Dak to be more aggressive as far as when I'm going to come out of the pocket. So we can't take that away from them, because it's going to help out that offense, Jenna.
All right, good stuff. See, coming up, does Kirk Cousins make the Vikings Super Bowl contenders just like that? That's next on First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Candy is back with us. What up, Chris?
Not much, Jenna. Ready to get back into some football talk.
Gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Let's do that thing. Kirk Cousins made his Vikings debut this weekend, and it appeared as if, at least in the early goings, Cousins earned every penny of his guaranteed $84 million, completing all 4 of his pass attempts for 42 yards and a touchdown. Now, pair this with 2 dynamic receivers and that dominant Vikings offense, and you might have a Super Bowl contender here. Chris Kenny, how much better does Kirk Cousins make the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, the Vikings front office is hoping that he makes them one game better and helps them get to the Super Bowl. That's why they're paying him $10 million per year over what Case Keenum got with the Denver Broncos. It's because he's a better quarterback from a talent perspective than Case Keenum. And, CC, you were making the point talking about how the Vikings defense was playing against Case in their preseason game this past weekend. Yeah. And you were saying how those guys were going to pack it in terms of the coverage between the numbers, force Case Keenum to throw the ball outside of the numbers. He's a limited quarterback when it comes to arm talent and making those specific type of throws. But Kirk Cousins gives you a little more variety on the offensive side of the ball because he has that arm talent to be able to stretch the field and challenge the defense on all 3 levels. So you have more variety. You should be more explosive on the offensive side of the ball. If you put it with that championship caliber defense, this should be a team that's capable of getting to the Super Bowl.
And listen, I know people will look at Case Keenum's numbers last year and say, I mean, he was an excellent quarterback. He was almost not quite the volume of yards, but quarterback rating wise, right in line with what Kirk Cousins has done over the last 3 years. But it wasn't quite through smoke and mirrors, but it was through a lot of really good work by Pat Shurmur. It's one of the reasons why he's now a head coach somewhere, and the Vikings have a new offensive coordinator.
Right. Had several opportunities.
Right, and because of what he did with Case Keenum. You are not going to have to do so many, call it exotic things, to move the football through the air with Kirk Cousins as your quarterback. And I know people this morning focused on the touchdown pass, the short one to Stephon Diggs, but the play that set up that touchdown pass, it's simply, I don't think Case Keenum can make this throw. I don't think Case Keenum, I don't know where it is in the progression. See, you can see that I really can't, but what I know is he throws it right when the corner's beat and right before the safety's going to get there. What else is
that? Run a little play action, a little counter action. Thielen's coming across the field as his primary. He takes the harder throw and throws it up the sideline. Stephon Diggs runs a little stutter go here. He puts it in a place that he can only put him. But, Nick, you pointed out the flight of this football. Case does not have as strong as arm. All right, so watch how quick this ball gets over the DB's head, up and down, inside the red zone to be able to take advantage even of tight coverage. That's not something that they could do last year, or it's not something they could depend on doing week in and week out.
Now, there is going to be a little adjustment, and you're right, from last year to this year, because Pat Shurmur is now with the Giants. They've got John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach from the Eagles. Mm-hmm. He's going to come over and be their OC. So there's going to be some moving parts with the understanding of the offense. with the skill position guys, Steelen, Diggs, Rudolph, those guys, they're going to have to adjust to a little bit of a different system, maybe some change in verbiage, that type of thing. But Kirk Cousins, he's going to make things so much easier for those guys. They're not going to have to do as much of the heavy lifting. With Case Keenum, because he was limited talent-wise, there was a lot that was put on those skill position players. Case Keenum takes a—I mean, Kirk Cousins yep. should take a little bit of the pressure off of those guys. They don't have to do as much when Case Keenum was their quarterback. They won't have to do as much this season.
Are they better this year? How much?
Well, they have to be better. I mean, there's only one way that you could say that it was the right decision for the Minnesota Vikings, which is that group gets past the NFC Championship game. A lot of things fell their way last year, including Aaron Rodgers getting hurt. Yep. Anthony Barr sacked him, broke his clavicle. We all know the story. So this is going to be a tougher conference than they faced last year, a lot more competition. So it's not going to be an easy road for the Minnesota Vikings, but I do think they're a significantly better team just because they upgraded at the quarterback position.
The Vikings, I believe, they can benefit the same way Philadelphia did. I don't believe Philadelphia makes it to the Super Bowl, and Super Bowl champs, they don't have home field advantage. So it's not as if we need Kirk Cousins to be one game better. We need Kirk Cousins over 16 games that they could have the best record. If they had the best record in the NFC, they could play in Minneapolis, which would be a huge advantage in trying to get to the Super Bowl in Atlanta. So as we watch this NFC that is very, very deep, the Rams, the Eagles, the Vikings, Green Bay, Atlanta, New Orleans, Carolina, all these teams that are stockpiled, like, we need to start thinking about home field advantage because the Vikings with that bad offensive line, if you got a bad offensive line, you do not want to be on the road. And we saw in Philadelphia, man, they manhandled that offensive line, and that's what led to the Philadelphia Eagles getting to Super Bowl 52.
Well, and so that's the key. If we're going to do like a tail of the tape between the Eagles, which right now are the gold standard in the NFC and maybe in football, and the Vikings, if I just kind of go unit for unit, I like the Vikings secondary more. I like the Vikings linebacker. Backers more. I like the Eagles defensive line more. I like the Vikings wide receivers more. I like the Eagles running backs more. I like the Eagles quarterback more. I like the Vikings coach more, but they're all pretty close. And then the one spot.
Vikings wide receivers over the Eagles wide receivers.
Oh, yeah, I thought I mentioned that. I apologize if I didn't. The one spot, though, where it is not close is offensive line. It wasn't close a month ago, by the way. And since then, their best offensive lineman, arguably Nick Easton. What was the stat on Easton last year, C?
Over 400 snaps. Only five guards played 400 snaps. And he's very, very athletic. Technique, a coach's dream, and they lost their coach,
yeah.
But he gave up no sacks in 400 snaps and three pressures. So he played technically the best offensive guard in football last year.
And he's now done for the year. You talk all the time, Canty, when we're talking about the Colts, guard-center-guard combo, right?
That's it. Mm-hmm.
So they lost their left guard for the year, Nick Easton.
Yes.
Then their center, Pat Eflin, and their right guard, Mike Roomers, aren't practicing yet. Now, those guys aren't done for the year. They might be ready week one. But you add to that to the tragic loss of their offensive line coach, Tony Sperano, to an untimely death. Like, that was the weakness of their team 2 months ago, and now it's been exacerbated. That is, and when we're talking about all these great teams in the NFC, what's the Rams' strength? It might be their D-line. What's the Eagles' strength? It might be their D-line. Like, your weakness is going up against other teams' strengths. That's the concern for them.
No, it has to be the concern, but hopefully getting Dalvin Cook back and being able to have that dynamic runner in the backfield, more balance, offsets that a little bit. Because those offensive linemen, they're a lot better when they're going forward in the run game than they are in pass protection. So that becomes the equalizer in terms of what you do on the offensive side of the ball when you have those moving parts
on
the line.
And one other small thing, Kirk Cousins has been successful the last 3 years in Washington with an offensive line that was banged up. In and out of that lineup. So he's got better personnel and has dealt with the spotty offensive line play.
Nobody's worried about Dalvin Cook coming back?
Not as worried. I mean, he's a quality football player. They still need Murray, and they still need potentially a third down back to be able to. We don't want to see him have 300 carries this year.
The fact that he was full go on day one of training camp lets me know that the coaching staff, the medical staff, they're not too worried.
And our statistician Dusty made a great point earlier, which was it seemed like every year.
I'll be
okay. That each year, in addition to Jay Gruden in Washington seemingly taking odd shots. shots at the quarterback. Each year, he took a different wide receiving weapon away from Kirk Cousins. The best wide receivers he ever had was his first year as a starter, and then it got worse and worse. This will far and away be the best group of pass catchers Kirk Cousins ever had. Like, and so we might see the best version of Kirk that we've seen.
All right, Chris, stick around. Will we see Sam Darnold under center for the Jets week one? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Caney. Is it possible the Jets don't have a quarterback problem? I mean, Chris Caney, it's funny to think there's a position the Jets aren't worried about. But number three overall pick Sam Darnold looked great on Friday night, throwing for 96 yards and a touchdown. And Teddy Bridgewater looked great on Friday night, leading the Jets to scores on both of his possessions. On Sunday, it was Darnold taking more first-team reps in practice. Kenny, how much more does Sam Darnold have to do in order to start week one?
Well, I think he's done what the coaching staff and the front office want him to do, which is show an understanding of the offense, go out there and prove to your teammates and yourself that this stage is not too big for you. So you saw that last night, I mean, the Friday night in the preseason game against the Falcons. On his second drive in the game, it was a two-minute drive. He was 7 of 8 in passing on that drive. It resulted in a touchdown. So seeing him operate the two-minute drill in the fashion that he did, the smash route that he threw to Clive Walford on the 7 route to set up the touchdown throw, that third down, 14. To Charles Johnson, being able to run the scramble drill, stepping up and out rather than trying to scramble. Those are things that you want to see from a young quarterback, just the ability to have that kind of poise. I was talking with Mike Maccagnan when I was out at Jets camp last week, and he said one of the things that we love about Sam is his ability to process information, and he doesn't make the same mistake twice. So when he's on that kind of learning curve, I think it bodes well for him to play sooner rather than later, but I know that the organization is committed to making sure that he's absolutely ready when they turn over the reins to
him. Yeah, I hope Jets fans take this the right way. To me, he's a much more explosive version of Chad Pennington. Now, I got a lot of respect for Chad Pennington because he's a brilliant football player.
As do I.
You know, he could take command of the huddle without having the physical things that quarterbacks typically have. But Chad, a great leader, understood football. Now, I believe Sam has a bigger arm, more athletic ability, but those same leadership type qualities, I believe that Sam has those. He just needs to keep growing. Also realize, because you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes. So how does he respond when he has failure? Now, hearing what's coming out of Jets camp, he's done well as far as even when he's made mistakes, he's corrected those mistakes quickly. Man, this guy's going to have a lot of bad Sundays, though. All right? We're not going to be coming on here every Monday and being like, hey, what about the Hall of Fame quarterback with the Jets? No, he's going to go through some ups and downs. They need a running game. They need one receiver to be dominant, to give him a safety
bonus.
Where are these things,
nice.
I mean, where are these things going
good.
To go? Because it's hard to be good as a quarterback if you don't have those things. They got it right as far as their selection of a quarterback. So that's one good thing that the Jets at night, they can rest. Now, how do I help him? How do I make sure he reaches his potential by putting those other things around him?
All right, so you asked Jenna, what does he have to do to start week one of the season? The biggest thing he can do is put himself in position to start the third preseason game. Because I think the Jets are a team, they have no idea right now who's starting the third preseason game. Why is that? If people aren't familiar, that's the game that's closest to a regular season game. Starters will play not only typically the whole first half, so
yes,
usually into the second half.
That's the NFL model.
It's the NFL model. In the fourth preseason game, it doesn't really matter nearly as much for the starters. So he played well in the first preseason game. The second one is critical because only if he plays really well in the second preseason game, they might say, you know what? It's now yours to lose. And by that, we mean we will make you our week three preseason starter. And again, he's going to have to play well in each of those games. But if he doesn't play well in the second preseason game, then he's not going to be the starter in the third preseason game, most likely. And then he's really behind the eight ball in starting the season. You mentioned you talked to Mike. Oh, go ahead, Canty.
Go ahead.
You mentioned you talked to Mike Maccagnan.
Mm-hmm.
I said this earlier, and I'm curious if you think it's accurate having talked to Maccagnan. The Jets were drafting sixth. They traded 3 second-rounders in the sixth to move up to the third pick. I feel like they got the guy they would have taken number one overall. If they went 1-15 last year, they would have taken Sam Darnold number one overall. Is that the sense you get?
No, that's exactly what he said to me. I mean, Mike McCagnan was talking about the pre-draft process, and he said he was surprised by how much information he knew about other teams' draft plans and the fact that he was going to be able to make that move. He was comfortable with whatever quarterback that was going to come to him, whether that be Darnold or whether that be Baker Mayfield, the other guy that went in the top three picks. So, I mean, he knew that he was going to have an opportunity to make to draft one of those guys. And I think
if he moved from six to three.
If he moved from six to three. And he did that because if he would wait till he was on the clock to make that move, then when the Colts were there, it probably would have cost him more draft capital rather than just the 3 second round picks. He was going to have to give up more, and he wanted to hold on to the 2019 first round pick.
Why wouldn't you guys, why wouldn't you just start Sam Darnold week one? Let him just get
in there.
What's
the reason not to do it?
Why wouldn't you do it?
Well, the first thing, there's certain steps that when you have a quarterback competition, there's no way in week number one he was better than these veteran guys. So the coaches, they have a philosophy, the best player is going to play regardless of where he was drafted. He also missed the beginning of training camp with his contract negotiation. So he hasn't earned that in the locker room. So you want to be gradual, like, because you want guys to respect the process of winning jobs, and you want him to be able to go to week number two, show improvement from week number one. In week number three, with those starters, be a force multiplier, because it's important. He still has some boxes he needs to check in veteran eyes and in the coaching staff's eyes in the front office before they make him that week number one starter. But he is on the right track. But you still have to keep getting better as a pro.
Here's what worries me, CC, and this is why I don't think he should be the week one starter. I know he looked good on Friday night, but keep in mind, it is the preseason, base fronts and coverages. It's going to be pretty easy to understand the decisions going through your progression as a young quarterback. But those defenses get complex as we get to the regular season. They're game plan specific, and when these teams put you under the microscope, they see the things that you do well. They're not going to let you do those. They're going to force you to do things that you're uncomfortable with. So I don't know that it's not too much to ask Sam Darnold to be the week one starting quarterback. Just from the standpoint, he's going to have to digest three different game plans over the course of 10 days. That's how they open their season. They got three games in 10 days. So I'm a little bit concerned with making him the week one quarterback just from that aspect.
So here's my question to both you guys, because I thought you might bring up the schedule part of it, which is, why do they have three games in 10 days? The Jets have a week three Thursday night game. So that's just how it works out. They play Thursday night basically as early as you can. So, but if we are going
but they're playing a team also that's under the same.
Well, under the same, and they're also, you look at who they're playing defensively the first 3 weeks versus the following. Because I think most people would say is, wait the first 3 weeks, then the benefit of playing a Thursday is you have the mini bye, you have 10 days before your next opponent. But your first 3 weeks, you're playing Detroit, Miami, Cleveland. None of those teams are great defensively, at least I wouldn't anticipate. They weren't last year, I wouldn't anticipate it.
Right.
Following those 3 weeks, here's what they got. Jacksonville, Denver, Indy, Minnesota. So then you have two excellent defenses in Jacksonville, Minnesota. I think a pretty good defense in Denver. And then there's the Colts. Like, what do you think would be harder for the young quarterback? An excellent defense like the Jags with 10 days to prepare, or to start off in the fire where you know week three you've got the short week?
Well, here's what I'll say, Nick. I don't know that you got to start him in any of those games. I don't know that you can't wait till the back half of the season before you start giving Sam Darnold some reps. I don't think it's a situation where he's got to be your guy in the first 2 months of the season. The Jets are going to be patient with this, because this year is not about trying to get to the postseason. This year is about just making sure your young quarterback is who you thought he was when you drafted him with the third overall.
Can I guess
just
have what to you're laugh laughing
because,
about?
Because just, there the is schedule. No, yeah, but there is no easy answer though. Okay. There is no Washington State. There is no, oh, man, who are we playing this weekend? Pac-12, last in defense.
Right.
No, sir.
Sure.
It's the NFL, and y'all might think it's more difficult to start week number one, but I would much rather have all those reps. I would much rather have 3 weeks of game planning before I start facing two of the top five defense in the NFL in Minnesota and Jacksonville.
So
I would much rather that not be my rookie debut against one of those defenses. No.
Well, that was my concern. Is you're right, there's no Washington States, but there are a few Alabamas, and Jacksonville's one of them. And so, if like that's the game where you've got the 10 days, week four, and man, that's a hey, Jalen Ramsey, hey, Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, if these guys stop fighting each other, they're going to be fighting you. And so, like, that to me would be a tough way to start off, especially with the offensive line and the receivers Darnold has to work with.
Kenny, thanks so much. You went down. You went down today.
Almost, Jenna. You almost there. You almost had it.
She murdered that.
You were that close, Jenna. Yeah.
I never should have said I had.
She went from trying to quote you to almost losing her job.
Oh, my God. Almost all of us.
We got so much more coming up right after this. Coming
that only makes sense.
Let's do it. Yesterday, the world saw vintage Tiger at the PGA Championship. The 64 that he shot Sunday was the lowest of his major career for a final round. Chris Carr, do you win or out on Tiger Woods winning another major?
Tiger's 42 now, turns 43 December the 30th this year. Over the next 5 years, staying healthy and playing 20 majors, going to win. Gonna win three of them.
Three
gets
of them.
18. Gets to 18.
No, well, that would be 17. That would get to 17.
He needs 4 to get to 18. I'm in.
I'm absolutely in. Listen, did I bet on Tiger to win this major? I did. It was 28-1. I was feeling pretty good.
Do you get any money for close?
No. If I ever write a book on gambling, that's what I'm going to call it.
What?
You don't get any money for close. The Nick Wright story. But I wish I did.
It's just like everything else. You don't get nothing.
Nothing. You rip that ticket up. But I am in. He has the best score to par of anyone on the tour in the last two majors. He's as close as you can come without winning. I am absolutely in. He'll get it done.
All right, on to another all-timer. Barry Bonds had his number retired by the Giants this weekend, and during the ceremony, Willie Mays had a message for the Hall of Famer saying, quote, vote this guy in. Nick, you in or out on Barry Bonds deserving to be in the Hall?
I am 100% absolutely unequivocally in. He is the greatest baseball player of the modern era. And if you say, what about the part of his career with steroids? Take the last 7 years away. He still has three MVPs, 500 home runs, 500 stolen bases. This guy was the most dominant individual baseball player of any of our lifetimes. Absolutely 100% in. See?
Didn't you mention, what would he have done before the roids, right? Mm-hmm. What happened? 500?
500 home runs.
Three-time
MVP.
Yeah, so it's even more of an indictment, a guy who didn't need it. God had blessed him beyond his imagination. I know his godfather, Willie Mays. I mean, I know they're really, really tight. But did you use PEDs? Yeah. Yes. Did his head grow? Yes. While he was playing? Yes. Yes, so he shouldn't be in. I'm out.
Oh, man.
PEDs. In? Out. Did you use them or not? It's pretty simple.
Yeah. CeCe's black and white on this one.
All right, over to the NFL, where Sam Darnold had an impressive debut on Friday night. Jets fans excited, but Giants fans maybe scratching
their back and play now.
Heads after their team passed on him in April's draft. Chris Carter, are you in or out on the Giants making the right decision drafting Saquon over Sam Darnold?
It's about priority of position and getting a quarterback. And Sam Darnold, it's not the talent running back. No, it's about Sam Darnold being a franchise quarterback. I thought he was, so I'd have to be out.
That's exactly. This has nothing to do with Saquon Barkley. He could be everything everyone says he's going to be and more. And if the Giants don't have a quarterback, it doesn't won't much matter. Mm-hmm. I think Darnold would have been the safest pick of any of the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. He was there at two, so I'm also out. Like, Sam, if you have the number two pick of the draft and your quarterback's going into year 15, you have to draft a quarterback.
Would you rather have Zeke or Carson Wentz?
It's the exact question.
Even if he turns out to be Zeke, you still rather have that franchise quarterback.
All right, moving on to Case Keenum. He made his Broncos debut Saturday against his old team. Keenum was less than inspiring, going 3-and-out on both of his drives. It was just one start, guys. Nick, you went around on Case Keenum leading the Broncos back to the playoffs.
I'm out. They're in one of the most competitive divisions in all of football with the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Chargers. I think you made a really good point earlier, C. We say the Broncos got two great wide receivers. Well, we have had no evidence of that since Peyton Manning left. They have Emmanuel Sanders and a guy who used to be great in Demaryius Thomas. Yes. You added that. I don't know about the running back situation. The defense is not as dominant as it was. I'm out on them getting back to the playoffs.
How much are they paying Case a year, Nick?
Well, it's 2 years, $36 million with $25 million guaranteed. Okay, so average of 18.
18. So about $18 million. They don't think you're a top-flight quarterback, right?
Yep.
About $18 million, Blake Bortles reigns right there, right?
Right there, yep.
Okay, I'm out. Because of what they paid him, they know what they're getting in, Case. Still challenged being in the pocket. Will he throw the ball into coverage? Yes, Case will do that. I don't think they're going to like Case after the two seasons if he makes it through those two in Denver.
All right, next up, the Browns quarterback Tyrod Taylor weighed in on the potential signing of Dez Bryant. Tyrod says, quote, "That would be awesome. See you in or out on Dez being a good fit with the Cleveland Browns."
I'm totally in. I believe they have the coaching staff in Todd Haley and in their head coach who can handle Dez Bryant. I believe the locker room would be okay with Dez Bryant. And with Josh Gordon, us not hearing anything about him the last couple weeks, I wonder, does that extend into the regular season and he misses game time? So bring Dez into Cleveland.
All of the reasons off the field that Dez has remained unsigned with very little interest concern me to come to this team in particular, because when you're trying to build a new culture, when you're trying to get just your second win in two plus seasons, I think it's dangerous to have the single most accomplished player on your offense be this guy. And so while I think for Dez it would be a good fit, for the Browns I do not think it would be. And for what they're trying to build there, I am out.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.